Good morning, everyone. Today is Thursday, November 1st, 2018. It is 9 a.m. and the Josephine County Board of County Commissioners is assembled for a county administrative workshop in the conference room. We're going to shift, with your indulgence, we're going to shift some stuff around this morning. Commissioners, if it's okay with you, I'd like to jump down to other because we have a slight presentation from our planning and legal and code enforcement side. Just a quick presentation, just kind of an update, and then also we're going to shift over and take item 2A, court-appointed special advocate. We're going to take you second, okay? And that'll just kind of get people moving
Sounds good.
So introduce yourselves, and what are you here for this morning?
Julie Jim, we're an elected official.
So my name is Julie Schmelzer. I'm the Director of Community Development, and we have Denise Montijo, Code Enforcement.
And I'm Augusta Sogu. I'm Assistant Legal County Counsel.
And we just wanted to, for a while we've been talking about enforcement, and you've been approving compounds to go through the legal department for enforcement, and we had two really good successes this week that we wanted to share with you. I know a lot of times the public doesn't think that we're doing anything, and we thought, well, at least let everybody know what's going on with these cases so you can see how the process is working. First off, I have to tell you that Denise created a process that involves the legal team. It's been Leah and Augustus, Sheriff's Office, Animal Control, Facilities Maintenance, and the Health Department all working together on these cases. Health Department comes in at the end to do cleanup, but it's really been a big joint effort. So I'm Denise has court at 9:45, so I'm just going to have her start the process and go through the two cases that we had this week and how the process worked.
Okay, I'll actually get started on that. So the two properties in question are 2620 Woodland Park and Grants Pass, just outside the urban growth boundary, and the other property is 195 Pinewood Way in Cave Junction. So starting back in about May of this year, the board authorized the legal...
In CJ proper or in the Illinois Valley?
Illinois Valley.
Illinois Valley. So back in January of this year, the board gave legal the authority to use any means necessary to go after compounds that had a health and safety risk, including compounds where drug activity was taking place. So the two most immediate properties on our list were 2620 and 195 Pinewood. And so over the last few months, we've gone through the legal process, civil procedure, getting everybody served. In 195 Pinewood Way, after serving everybody, we didn't receive a response. We went through the proper channels to default every individual who was named in that lawsuit.
Careful in that chair. Sometimes it flies back.
Perch on it. Don't sit on it.
In terms of the legal side of it, we were able to obtain a default and a general judgment from the court for both cases. I'm sorry, well, that's not entirely accurate. For 2620 Woodland Park, we actually had that separate trial, and that was settled shortly before trial in the county's favor. So everything that we asked for in our complaints, including closing down the property for 1 year, boarding it up to anybody, and cleaning up the property was granted by the court.
For Woodland Park or the Pinewood?
For both.
So how does it get cleaned up? Because looking at these pictures that Denise sent...
We'll get there.
Yeah, okay. We'll get there.
Cool. Okay. And so as part of...
Because this isn't something you can board up.
Boards are not fixing.
Some of them you can. So, sometimes you can.
So boarding up would be for like 2620 Woodland Park, where there's an actual structure there to keep people from going in and keep people from squatting. So as part of the general judgment, we are allowed to have the sheriff go in and remove individuals from the property and to secure the property. I'll let Denise touch on the process that happened this week.
I feel like I should back up a little bit to say how we all got together. First of all, when I started doing this, you know, we didn't have sheriffs. Now that Dave is Dave has just done a phenomenal job of hooking me up with all of these guys that have my back so I can go onto these properties and not have to worry. Plus, they have documented these for a year or more, and many of them went back 6 years that we're working on in there. So as we went through that, well, 2 years ago, we actually met before we even got to this. And then moving forward, once Augustus got here, we were allowed to implement the processes that we came up with. And so I open them. I start them as land use. If they have criminal activity and criminal behavior and drug use, these guys document it for me. They funnel it all to Augustus and myself. And then we get to the point where we can take it to court. Once we do that, we are able to bring in probation, parole, DHS, both child services and adult services, because many of these are people being taken advantage of as we're moving into these properties. Fast forward to the properties that we did this week. Those were high drug properties, so we were really trying to get those through as fast as we could in the best way that we could. And we documented them. He got them through. We went in there. In order to get this done, you have to have on site at that time the sheriff, myself, building maintenance, and animal control in these cases. 2 weeks later, environmental health comes in and they will start the cleanup process. They'll do the assessment. During this 2 week period, I have to give them a chance to go back a 2 hour time frame to call me. Sheriff will come out with me and they will get to pick up the rest of their personal effects, like hopefully moving a couple of those trailers off on 195, which is what they tell us they're going to do. If they don't, it'll be part of the cleanup.
So then, after they get their possessions and 15 days goes by, then what happens?
Okay, so then Justin comes in. He assesses.
He will come in
from public health. He'll assess the cleanup. Him and I will work on that together. He will also go out with sheriffs. We will always go out with sheriffs to these properties because we expect that people will come back and that we'll have to remove them. They have a trespass. They will get trespassed. If they enter there, no one can enter the properties during this time after this 2 week period is over.
Who does the cleanup and who pays for it?
Justin, would you like to?
Yeah, so.
Probably should come up in a chair and introduce yourself.
So, my name is Justin Fimbris with the Josephine County Health Department. I work with the Environmental Health Division. And to do the cleanup, we usually go out and do the assessment, determine what kind of waste is out there, how much rubble, how much building material, car parts, and then also assess and see if there's any hazardous conditions, any raw sewage dumping onto the ground, or any batteries or industrial waste like that. And then once all that's determined, we'll meet with a company who does this type of cleanup and have them come through, and usually two or three of them, and give us a bid. And then once we get that bid, the last property we did, we went through the Solid Waste Agency and they had some funding to clean up the property. That's how that works.
So does the Solid Waste Agency put a lien, or do they pay it outright?
Legal will end up putting them.
I want to know that, the answer to that question. But at the other question I have is, what happens to the things that are of value? Are they just put back in the house? And, it's not all junk. But,
Well, we give them an opportunity to come back and get what they can.
Yeah.
And then...
And then in terms of anything of value, if it all can't be collected, don't really want to leave that to the sheriffs to take care of. We'd probably just leave it in the property and have it secured there.
You just put it in the house and board it up.
Yes.
So I'm just curious, because the pine wood, Woodland has structures. It looks like it's, I'm not going to make an assessment of if it's habitable or not, but pine wood.
There's nothing of value, actually, really, that I saw there that's not going to be picked up by people I've already talked to. They have to call me and we've already made arrangements with them. Actually, two of them have already called me.
And then outside Woodland Park, there's a huge pile of debris. Is that part of what gets cleaned up?
All the outside of the property will be cleaned and cleared. Mm-hmm. We want to make it so that we've encouraged the neighbors to keep on contacting us because
if they see anything.
So our team now is everybody. It is going to be the community reporting to us because I have 189 more. So we have to make sure that we are really have the public come in.
It's really important that this process be dialed in, because looking at Rob back there as liaison to solid waste, there's some resources there, and that's actually kind of what it's for, but, you know, they're not, and they shouldn't be, really in the grant business. It should be in the lien business, and I know they've been reluctant to grant funds if it isn't in the form of a lien. And so whatever, I know that that's just an important point that we talk about, because if you have 189 and we only have money to do four, that doesn't get very far if we don't have the process set up. And it would be like, oh, whoops, it sure would have been great if we discussed this 4 houses ago before we burned our resource water. I mean, there's still sheriffs and there's you guys. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have the money to pay for that contractor, I know Ryan doesn't have the staff to do it. And so it's just one of those.
Well, really, and Ryan can only do the county-owned properties. He can't do the private. Anyway, we have to have somebody do the private ones.
And that's not necessarily true, but whatever. He can do whatever we ask him to do.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure of that.
And also in the past, a lot of these...
Because he's used correction crews sometimes in the past with other
properties. Some of the properties we did in the past have been county-owned, so then we've charged them to property reserve to be reimbursed for the sale.
We're probably getting more into the nuts and bolts. This was just kind of a presentation as to what on these two properties. And that's this is a discussion. It's going to be ongoing from now on out as far as where the money comes from, how it's reimbursed, if it's reimbursable, so on and so forth.
I think we settled that.
Yeah. Okay.
Is the new position that was proposed for solid waste in the partnership with community development and public health, is that in place yet?
Not yet. Not completely yet. So we have to go through and train and work out the details of them working, coordinating with us. So that way Denise isn't just chasing garbage violations. She can focus on these big ones like we're talking about right now.
The nexus of that is that when Mr. Hall back there writes his story, you know, is it an appropriate use of general fund dollars?
Where is
that money coming from? Who's paying for this stuff?
Good point.
It should be the violators. And, you know, John Q. Public is like,
I don't want to pay
for that. Yeah, that's not my job. It's not in my neighborhood.
Good
you know,
point.
That's what this, you know, and aren't there tip fees? It's got to figure out another way to pay for it. How it's the money is a thing people in Josephine County really care about.
Thank you. Okay.
I think I feel like I need to say, you know, from a year ago from now, though, I mean, the public trust we have gained, the way they are reporting to us, Shane and I are, and the other two resident deputies are speaking at these neighborhood watch meetings. They've really become part of our team to help us identify everything, and they're trusting us. We've finally gained that public trust, and this is so important. Not only that, all the agencies are working together now, and they're keeping in contact, and this is something that didn't happen, you know, until a year ago, and now it's getting better and better, and it's so important because...
I'm encouraged because the first time Commissioner Morgan and I came in here and legal had a stack this deep and said, where are you on that stack? They go, gee, we don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
The thing was so overwhelming. And it was always when you say, hey, what are you doing? I said, it was like this. Everybody was pointing at another agency, and now they're all pointing at each other in the same room. And that's fantastic because this is showing Camp Joy Road was probably the first one.
Yeah.
And as soon as we did Camp Joy Road, all of a sudden there was other. I'm driving out Williams Highway. There's a half a dozen places that were just eyesores, and now they're all being cleaned up. And
well, this is the benefit of this.
I think we are coming type thing, you know.
Yeah.
And people are they're just thinking, well, you know, we're going to get it eventually, so let's just get on this thing. So I'm encouraged by it. Because, you know, we're starting on that pile. And like you say, the pile's big, but at least it's starting to come down.
And without
not
the
that
resident,
there won't be additions
yeah,
to it.
And without the resident deputy program, this wouldn't be happening. This is just phenomenal
great.
For us.
Everybody
the amount of communication that's occurring right now is phenomenal. And that's what's getting it done.
Yeah. Yeah.
The different agencies working together, bringing in DHS, APS, Denise, animal care. And when we all start talking and working on an issue, whether we're working with the property owner, and in most cases, these situations are somebody being taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
It's an elderly. It's someone that doesn't have the capability of making the decisions, whether it be a family member or people just showing up and saying, I'm not leaving.
I'm here.
Those are the people that are taken advantage of these individuals, and it's the same properties that are related with drugs. And for the most part, throughout my investigation and dealing with these things, they're all, for the most part, at least in the South County, these properties are related, meaning they're related by drug traffic.
Yes.
And there's probably five that I can. One was Woodland Park, and so the community is pretty happy. That neighborhood is pretty happy that at least they're seeing us work that situation.
Yeah.
Properties out in Williams that you mentioned that are tied to drug activity, and the same people were arresting in different locations, different problem properties are the same people we're encountering yeah. at the other locations. So when we're working together, we're making a dent, and it's got to impact the level of crime. If we can
yes.
fix these issues, then I would imagine theft will decrease in Williams.
Good.
Were there any arrests associated with this? Because yeah. it's really important that these people aren't just moved. They'll go someplace else.
And so I'll let him speak to the arrest, but I can tell you probation and parole is now backing us up and not just catch and release anymore. They're helping us in this, but let him.
Woodland Park, just to use that as an example, numerous arrests over the course of, I mean, that's been at least, it's been on the sheriff's office radar for probably 3 years as being an issue. Whether we get that from reports in the community or whether we just link something back to that property, whether it be a stolen car, or drug arrest individuals that we know that are using and abusing drugs and stealing from other people are associated with that address. So just by simply doing an area check, if you are familiar with Woodland Park, right by the Jerome Prairie store, you just have to drive by. And whether or not you spot a stolen car that you saw stolen two nights ago on Facebook, there it is. So it was that easy. And everybody knew it. The community knew it, and so they got pretty frustrated. And it's nice to be able to deliver, to yeah. be able to show them that we are listening, yeah. and
job.
We will take care of the issue if we find it an issue.
Good.
And more to come in the future.
Mr. Chair, Ralph,
yes, sir.
Just real
okay.
quick to put kind of a bow on this, too. I think this, at the Solid Waste Agency meeting 2-3 months ago when the program was funded, this is exactly the discussion that was had. And the reality is the agency nor the county can pay to clean up all these projects. This is where the horsepower should be spent, though. If there's $2 million of cleanups out there, let's just pick a number, using Denise, it's about $200,000 to $10,000 a shot. If her program can get a 10% compliance out there, that's $200,000. That's far more bang for the buck than you'd get saying, we're going to go spend $200,000 cleaning up a handful of properties. And you're going to get a lot broader community buy-in, I think.
Yes.
I would also add that this agency, I think, is going to want to see the county participating a bit more next budget year to say, hey, can we throw a bit more money actually at hard cleanups, the worst of the worst? But this is the far and away best bang for the buck you're going to get for those cleanup dollars.
Okay.
I won't be here, but the Solid Waste Agency collects tip fees. Our hard dollar is in hiring another code enforcement officer, having a legal attorney dedicated to this problem, and land use. You know, I think that's, if there's a match component that the agency's looking for, we've leaned in to the tune of $150,000 to $200,000.
There were six opinions in that room. I'm just telling you the kind
yeah,
of
yeah,
the
yeah.
flavor. So it doesn't become that, the city's trying to get this much.
That message has to be, the city's got some challenges too.
Yeah.
This is what the county is looking to contribute, so, or has contributed to this issue. And
okay.
a lot of that, some of that's general fund, marijuana, other things, but, you know, it's dollars that could have been spent someplace else. They were cost-benefit. This is where it needs to go. The priority was put there, so.
So in the follow-up on these properties that, Woodland Park, for instance, that getting cleaned up, getting boarded up, trespassing anyone there, you're leaning on neighbor support for notification when people are there.
And we're going to be watching this for 3 years. Every property that we shut down, we from a code enforcement standpoint,
mm-hmm.
we will be watching for 3 years.
And, I mean, just one that comes up is Randy Drive was one that was cleaned up and kind of focused on, and I'm getting reports back that it's drug house again, and it's not even been 6 months. So it's just that follow-up of the when and the how.
And we spoke on that about what are we going to do after we get done with yesterday. And obviously our department or our office is going to play a huge role in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's communication with the other deputies to make them aware that this occurred and we need to do frequent checks, at least when we're on. I know it's a priority for me to make sure that that problem does not come back. And knowing that other departments are on board as far as speaking with the DA and speaking
yes.
with everybody that would be involved, that if somebody does come back, obviously, they're trespassing and they'd be going to jail. So it's communication, but we definitely talked about it's important, like Twilight, for an example. Perfect. We do frequent checks, through that area to make sure that it is still boarded up, that it, nobody's inhabiting it, and that it's still staying clean.
Kind of like the Firewise program. You do the fuels removal. If you're not on it,
yeah.
Just grow back.
Yep. Okay.
Great, thanks.
Thank you very much. Great job. Great presentation. Thank you. It's what we're looking for here.
Collectively, we'd like to do a press release on these two to, you know, really showcase the progress. So, you know, the short version of this, we can work on that. I do it today.
Okay.
So any kind of information.
Grand jury and so forth.
Okay. Well,
I'll look into it.
Yeah, yeah. Just the high points, and then I think we can put it into a story.
High point of utilizing code enforcement.
Everybody's
from marijuana tax dollars and
address.
Resident deputy from leveraging the levy. I mean, those kind of key things.
And everybody. It really, I mean,
and team.
How many departments are involved?
Yeah.
There's a lot. Yes, there. I think there's four different departments from Joe County at Woodland Park yesterday.
Wow.
Pretty cool to see.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, next up, we're going to move to 2A. CASA? Arthur? Court-appointed special advocate presentation.
Hey there, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
See you.
Good to see you.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Simon.
Hi.
Jennifer Malenik.
Oh, Jennifer, I talked on the phone. Lily
yes.
Morgan.
Yes, hi, Lily. Nice to meet
nice
you.
To,
it's okay.
Here.
Nice to see
nice
you
see
again.
You.
It's been a long
nice
time.
Nice to meet you. Commissioner Dandy Young.
Hi.
Hey, and Arthur O'Hare, Finance Director.
Oh, Arthur.
Good morning. And I've invited CASA to come to the board meeting this morning to give just a briefest of presentations,
yes.
Specifically talking about the benefit of CASA to our community, to our youth, to the cooperative work with the juvenile justice program that we have, and the utilization of county funds. Should the county, you know, contribute those funds, what that would look like. Not should, but what, for the county to contribute those funds, what would that look like? So I'll... With that introduction, I'll leave it up to you.
Well, I just want to thank you for this opportunity and for the support, because we really have a crisis of child abuse in this county, and it has grown from 75 cases in DHS about 10 years ago to over 320 cases. So it's critical. It's tied to our drug and lack of law enforcement and things, and we're hoping we can bend that arc back down, but right now, the CASA is the only person. We're getting daily requests for CASAs, and we don't have enough CASAs, we don't have enough staff, and we didn't have enough funding to make it possible so that every child in foster care shall have a CASA.
So a CASA, I don't even know if we've said this yet, but it's a
court-appointed special
advocate.
And we
what
are,
do they do?
We are assigned by the judge to investigate, facilitate, advocate, and monitor these cases for the court on behalf of the foster children, and our single sole duty is to determine the best interest of the child. This program was created by a judge because these cases are complicated, and DHS has to advocate in large part on behalf of the parents. The children can only be removed if there's an active safety threat, so DHS kind of has to try to put the family back together, which is what we want, if it can happen. The attorneys that are assigned to the cases have to advocate for what the child says they want. And what I always say when I'm out speaking, if you were a kid that had been removed from your home, what are you going to tell your attorney? I want to go back home. So we are the person that the judge has asked that we would come in and make sure that it's safe, make sure that what the parents are being ordered to do, that they're doing, that the child doesn't slip through the cracks at DHS. We've all read those tragic stories about what can happen when a child goes through 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 placements. And that is happening in this county.
DHS workers.
In foster placements.
I dealt with one family last year that the kids had been removed from that family 7 times, and they were being sent back to the parents, who every few months are in the paper is being arrested for drug dealing.
Right.
And, you know, that. But, I mean, that's part of volunteering with the foster kids is what you kind of see, but...
Without the ability to have a CASA on a case to object to that, I mean, I was in court 3 weeks ago helping to get a child returned back to the family, the foster family that had her, since she was a day old. And they had, you know, DHS had removed that child and put her in a new foster home with a half-sibling that she barely knew, because their rules are constantly changing as well. So they have to do what their policies and guidelines say. We only have to do what's in the best interest of the child. So we have that benefit, that necessary, vital, unduplicated service to the children. And these are our most vulnerable community members. I mean, it doesn't get more vulnerable than to be a foster child. I always get a little drunk when I think about these kids, because I was raised like the anti-foster child. I never had anyone babysit me who wasn't a family member. I grew up in a block with 5, 6, 7 families that were related to me. So when I think about these kids, you know, and what they're going through...
We're not related, but it sounds familiar. Maybe we should check.
There's a connection here. I feel
he's related to everyone.
Well,
Simon's a distant cousin. He didn't know it.
Jennifer asked me to come do this, and I had spent 8 years covering horrific court stories about what happens to children. So I had the opportunity to come work in this community and help these kids not get abused again. The statistics of a child getting re-abused with a CASA is just exponentially lower than it is if they don't have a CASA and they don't have that support. We're the ones that are telling the judge it's not safe yet. Or it is safe yet. You know, it is safe. Let's close this case. Sometimes these cases just languish and these kids aren't getting returned to home and they should have been. It's a function of what, you know, DHS is having to do and what has happened in our community. And the level of abuse and the level of struggle that's happening, these cases are horrifically worse than they used to be. The types of abuse, the things that are happening. So not only does every child deserve by law to have a CASA, they desperately need one. So we desperately need this money so that we can go out and have a recruit, someone that can do recruiting, and not have to spend so much of our time just trying to do fundraisers so that we can get $5,000 or $6,000, where I'm having to spend my time doing that and not in court getting a child back where they belong and not training CASAs to be able to do that.
I think recruiting so that your CASAs aren't overburdened with having so many different cases. And having, you know, you should have, if you need 300, you should have 300 CASAs.
Right.
Where everybody can really focus, as opposed to, I know that there's a couple that probably have like way more than they should.
No,
because
well,
their heart is so big. And
you.
What's your caseload? I mean, how many
they're
clients
only,
do you have?
They're only me. I have 320 kids. I mean, the way it works in this county is when they come into care, I become the de facto CASA. So we have access. We become a party to the case in that moment. And then myself and my assistant manager, we are monitoring the cases to the best we can, triaging these kids up the list, you know, who is most at risk. And right now, who is most at risk would be a baby who does not, when we don't have enough CASAs, it's a baby who physically can't push the chair over to the, you know, cupboard and climb up and get the box of cereal. Or it's the teen who's likely to age out of this system and then just be dropped with nothing and end up repeating this cycle over and over
again. When do they age out of the system? 18?
Mm-hmm. There are some cases when they can go a little beyond that, but generally at 18. And by then, if they've been bounced and bounced and bounced, we have an opportunity to try to keep them in if they'll do certain things, but they're so fed up with what's happened to them that they just want to be free, but they're not ready to be free. Yeah. They have not learned life skills. They have, you know, they have been traumatized. That has not been healed. So those are the kids, right? And that doesn't mean we don't have 7-year-olds and 8-year-olds and 12-year-olds. But when we're looking at the cases and we only have like 35 CASAs and they can only take 5 cases, that's the statute, is that they can only take 5 cases.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Is there a limitation to how many cases that an advocate can have?
Right.
And they have them for a long time.
They have them until the close of the case. That's what they promise to take for the close of the case. It's high level. It's like... Apologies to anybody who's a Green Beret or but it is the highest level of advocacy that someone can do, of volunteering.
How does somebody volunteer for this? Or do
they
walk into your
office
and then you have a screening process? Or?
I've been on the radio. We've been doing, you know, we've had articles in all the newspapers. Mm-hmm. Outreach is challenging, you know, because it's a tough road to hoe, but it's vital that we have someone that can really focus on that.
What's the connection that you guys have with Community Bridges, who is overseeing the Every Child program as a nonprofit in town? Is that something that you've been connected with yet?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We work with all of the nonprofits, you know, that are child-related. So we...
I mean, like, Royal Family Kids is under Community Bridges.
Right.
It does the camp for the foster kids. And so they also have Every Child. And then Safe Families is one of the other components where they're trying to kind of intervene before the foster system gets involved.
Yeah. I mean, I could go... We're trying to keep it brief, but they tried to do a differential response rollout, and it crashed and burned. And so that may surface back again.
I'm just thinking that it's volunteers that might be recruitable. That if they've gone through some, if they've shown an interest in being involved at these levels, they might be able to be involved at
every
these
6 weeks. I'm up at DHS talking to all the new foster parent if they, you know, if they are able to gather and talking to them. And some of them, if they decide foster care isn't what they want to be doing, they may come via CASA. So we have tentacles out everywhere. I'm just saying it's. I love the Smart Reader program, but it's not like holding a kid in your lap and reading a book to them. It is dedicated. Service. You have to go to the child's home, the foster care home, to make sure it's safe. You go to their school, you talk to their counselors. The CASA oath supersedes HIPAA, so they have access to all medical records, everything, because the judge doesn't want to just hear the CASA's opinion. They want to know they know what they're talking about, because he's going to rule on that. I mean, that case I was talking about, the judge reversed an order that was put out by DHS, vacated the petition and return that child to the home, and we're still fighting to keep that child in the home. Because that's what we believe is in the best interest of the child, regardless of DHS policy has changed about certain aspects of her case.
So this money that we're, this is non-general fund, it's Forest Trust Reserve funding. There's currently 5 years at this appropriated level. That does tremendous things for Mr. Goodwin's program and the shelter. We're looking at trying to do, rounding out a more of a holistic approach. There's so many great nonprofits out there, as Commissioner Morgan was talking about. One of the things that, if I looked at the system and I convened every youth-focused, not-for-profit or government function about 3 years ago to just kind of have a conversation, and when I looked around the room, pretty strong advocates, and not saying that you're not, for every one of these programs, either state-funded or what have you, but there was a real shortcoming of advocacy expressed by the fact that the county wasn't really contributing, wasn't contributing anything to your program, but the free rent, and that's about maybe $4,000, $4,500 a year. We turned it over in 2013 to the Jackson County, quasi-Josephine County, CASA. And that was a real, you know, besides closing Mr. Goodwin's program, that was probably my biggest regret of serving in 8 years. And so looking in that time for a sustainable, stable funding stream for your program was key. And then highlighting, you know, leaving it up to you, but I think coming to the conclusion that you're best served by looking out after those 320 cases and kind of facilitating those, it's not that you can't do it, but it's not your core competency or in your wheelhouse. Somebody needs to be out there recruiting more causes to alleviate the load and set up, you know, a sustainable program, not just the funding element. And so that's what I see, you know, these funds being dedicated to. Let's get 150 more CASAs out there and shore up that difference to where maybe everybody only has two would be phenomenal.
That would be
and
phenomenal.
Then they just do the most stellar, you know, opportunity. We're just gasping for air right now, I can feel, with your program.
Yeah. Well, we've grown a lot, and if you talk to our community partners, if you talk to the attorneys, if you talk to the judges and things, they will say that the competency of the CASAs have grown exponentially in the last 5 years. The focus and the dedication, their court reporting, everything, that's been my focus to do that while I'm out speaking at all the Kiwanis and Rotary and all that, trying to get more people in and doing the articles. You know, it's heavy service, so people think long and hard before they do this. I frequently hear, I've been thinking about doing this for 5 years, but like Kirk Bratz, our court administrator, is going to become a CASA when when he's done retiring. So, I, you know, we're real proud of the program and where we've come. We've just been really struggling financially, trying to raise that much money in a community that's, you know, struggling. I'm pleased to see Hearts with a Mission and some of the other Family Nurturing Center and things come in because they are providing services that are needed.
Absolutely.
But this is a
different?
This makes the difference, life or death, sometimes with these kids. Yeah. It really does. If a child is returned home prematurely, not only will they end up being removed again, probably, but they're...
There's damage done while you're doing it.
Yeah. Every removal is a trauma. Every child living in a home with these kinds of things, it's akin to living in a war zone for them. So there's damage when they're home. There's damage when they're pulled out. We want them out and healed and back in a safe, loving home. Yeah. Every child deserves that. So that's what we're fighting for. And we're getting better and better and better at what we're doing, and we're hearing that over and over and over again.
San, you and I had talked at one point about the divorce process with the court appointed in Josephine County requires mediation,
mm-hmm.
but it's at some level, the kids are still the unheard voice
exactly.
in that process. And, you know, that ideally that not only would we have enough CASA
absolutely.
To handle every foster kid, but also to be able to speak into these divorce cases, which
right.
is creating trauma in
right. and
situations.
Juvenile cases,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, and the juvenile cases. There would be someone really looking to make sure, you know, what's really driving this, what's happening here, and how can we help fix that? We bring people together around the child's life in hopes that we can make it better. And
you were saying something about last year, about every dollar spent on prevention saves
$8
mm-hmm.
in treatment.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, getting it right in a person's life at this stage of the game, an investment
yeah.
in CASA right now in 300 or whatever it is, if it's just one, you don't even know how that's going to impact
oh.
societal change of not repeating or predisposed.
You know
how
the county has helped... us, because we were having some safety concerns around our building, and so
yes.
you guys have them walking and patrolling. And so I stepped out of the office one day and was thanking the patrol guy for walking, and he said, well, thank you for the work that you do. And I said, oh, thank you. I mean, we hear that a lot. And he goes, he stopped and, like, grabbed my arm, and he said, no, really, I was a foster child.
Wow.
And
Whoa.
I had a CASA.
Yeah. Wow.
Strong.
Right? You probably cry every day.
Chicky skin.
Well, I'm kind of a...
Chicky skin, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does.
I
mean,
have to disclose, this has been a passion of mine since
has.
Day one.
Yeah.
So I contribute. My family does.
Your mom.
We always have. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
I grew up like you.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, couldn't have been any better.
Yeah.
And I don't understand a world where it's not okay that every
yeah.
kid doesn't have that.
I always joke that when Jennifer, she called me at the Mail Tribune, I was the courts and social services reporter back in the day, and she called me to come do a story about CASA, and I thought, oh, great, something about what, migrant farm workers? I don't know, me CASA. I had no idea
oh
what it was.
Gosh.
I had no idea. And I went, and I sat through an orientation, and I talked to her, and I talked to the program director at the time, and I talked to a husband and wife CASA team, and I talked to teens that had aged out and had a CASA and how they were doing. And I was sold. I mean, I was like, I'm going to write you the best. And I did several, you know, several stories after that. But, I mean, I have been a true believer since then,
yeah.
and I can't stop talking about it. It
yeah.
turned out, well, my cousin was a CASA, and one of my nieces in Texas was a CASA, and we're kind of the unsung heroes.
Yeah.
So one of the things I want to do is get the best advocate person that will bring in more CASAs is the CASAs that we have. So starting next weekend, we're going to be at the Growers Market. We're going to be, you know, everyone.
I was
going to
say,
be.
You're certainly not getting your message out because I didn't know what it was until I took this office and until today and
yeah.
explained exactly what it is.
We are on social media.
It was out
we
there
are
somewhere.
On Instagram.
Somebody else's
we
problem.
Are on Facebook. Like I said, I've been in KJO. I've been KLDR. I've been in the newspapers. It's one of those things where as soon as you hear, like, court-appointed special advocate, you're just kind of like, what,
right.
what do they do? So we're working on that. That's one of the things we want to do is you know, we're always working on branding and how
right.
we can get this message out.
Well, you're always looking at, and I'm, what do they call it, acronyms? This,
yeah.
CASA, everybody CASA,
yeah.
everybody else in this room knows what it is. But until somebody actually says court-appointed special advocate, you
right.
go, well, I understand what that is, a little bit more about it.
Migrant housing.
And
yeah.
And until then, it's just CASA. And
right.
doesn't mean anything to me, as do a lot of the
right.
acronyms.
This funding element is going to really change.
And it probably, yeah. I do we need
Jason?
Do we need? We're full on next week's weekly business session. Is this something we need to pass this today or?
We've already passed it.
Okay.
This was just a culmination. You wouldn't want to ask her to come in and be like, We're actually not in favor of this. So.
You think already, I cried before?
Right, but I didn't know if it's an action item, how soon does the action need to take place?
I don't know.
Can it wait 2 weeks?
It's not an action item.
No, it's not.
We have asked that Jim Goodwin be the one that you coordinate through and just kind of will overseeing how what's going on, reporting to him on the updates. So
that's what I'm
It'll be easy.
Jim's sense of volunteerism just chokes me up.
Jim's been very supportive of CASA as well.
He's tremendously so.
Well, and it used to be part of the juvenile justice program and department, so CASA was a program within juvenile. So that's the connection there, too.
Yeah.
And we did discuss it as part of the board meeting back in September, where we talked about the SRS funding or under the umbrella of SRS funding, which included this, but the discussion also said, let's come back and let's hear from CASA specifically about what they do and how these funds would help them.
So that's
where we're at today.
Did anyone have any specific question other than?
I think the thing we need to just address is that we're not looking to change the administrative umbrella, that it's Jackson County, and I think that cooperative element continues to be beneficial, because we're really like a region. The money is going to stay in Josephine County.
Absolutely.
That's the priority, and that's what we're funding. And you know, almost challenge Jackson County is look what we just did. You know, we're the little guy in the room.
That was the board's first.
Yeah, the board went, hey.
Right? Leverage is what we'd always like to do, and I think all boats rise if we can try to do that. So. Yeah. Really, really important. But we'll just see how this goes for a couple of years, and if it works really, really well, we'll keep it that way. But knowing that if at one point we have to bring it back under juvenile, if that just makes administrative sense, then we look to do that. So
we're always open to that. That's all the money that's raised for Josephine County stays right here.
Great.
$4,800 goes to pay for all the administrative that's handled a year for Josephine County. So grant writing, grant reporting, compliance, HR, payroll, finance, all that jazz.
How much more would you be willing to take? Because that's less than our IS. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
We have some other departments we'd like to see if you guys
know. I'll turn into ass or something.
I wonder who the advocate is.
Thank you so much for
And there's no thank you needed. Sam's done a terrific job here. And, you know, with this, with the ability to build some better infrastructure and to, which will be a process, but we've got a plan. It can only go really well.
Who's on your board?
Well, we have 11 board members. We have our assistant district attorney, Marco Picado, is our board president. Vice president is John Watt. He owns a lobbying firm.
Is there anyone from Josephine County on your board?
No, and we've talked about that off and on over and over and over. And it's part of the thing is because it's very Jackson County people, it's meeting in Jackson County because it's at the lunch hour during the week.
Well, we don't mind traveling.
That's the thing. Is we just need somebody who's willing
regionally.
I'm sure
we could find somebody.
Like you.
Possibly, but yeah, I'm thinking of some other people. Delegation of responsibility is the first sign of leadership, so I'm trying to get pretty good at that. But yeah, no, I might have some free time in a little while. So.
That's what I was thinking.
Yep.
I would love that.
It would be great. I would enjoy that. So.
You have been a huge advocate of ours.
It's been a passion. So you sold me word one. Yeah. And so I think part of it was that I attended that meeting where you guys...
The MDT.
Yeah, and it should be a requirement of every board commissioner member to do that very, very early in their term so they recognize what's going on under the radar totally.
Yeah.
That some people are dealing with every day. People, thankfully, are dealing with every day. But you've been... Maybe?
MDT sounds familiar.
Multidisciplinary team. It's where they show the pictures, talk about every abuse case in the county.
Maybe I haven't been to a CASA MDT. I've been to a DHS once.
It's not just a CASA.
It's not CASA. We're a key member of it. It's in the CASA CAC office, but it's led by the DA. And so caseworkers will be in there, CASA will be in there, and they'll be discussing
the particulars of cases. It's
pretty eye-opening.
It's
We probably need to get going. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go back to item number 1A, juvenile justice. Mr. Goodwin is here to discuss A1, which is State of Oregon IGA, Intergovernment Agreement number 157704 between Oregon Health Authority and Josephine County Juvenile Justice to provide BRS services to local youth in the Turning Point Residential Program. And we just lost the quorum, so we'll wait till everybody gets back and has their
water bottle
and hits the feed bag and whatever they need to do. Okay, now we're back.
Can I start with a 1 minute fun fact about CASA and Josephine County?
Yeah. If you'd like, yes.
We're not known to be
continuation.
We're not known to be super innovative in a lot of ways, but the very first CASA in the state of Oregon was a previous director, Terry Soderbergh. And we had a judge years ago, Neufeld, who was quite the character. This is in the early 80s, I believe. Came back, said, I just went to a national conference. There's a thing called CASA. You're going to a training in somewhere in California, and you're going to do it. So he
don't
went to the training.
Don't ever say we're not
came back
here, Jim.
Well.
I'm only here for another 65 days, but don't you ever say that. The first juvenile justice and shelter. 1996,
yes.
Josephine County.
Again.
I got
the first CAC.
We were.
Yes.
We are totally creative because we have to be here.
But I don't like that being lost because we're.
Terry.
In the last few years, we've been known for some things that we don't want to be known for.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm coming from with that. And the architect of the shelter detention,
right?
The fundraising to build the brick and mortar, all of that, what we have today. But. And then the Children's Advocacy Center right after that, the very first one of those in the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
Both of those programs were right here in Josephine County. So, yes, we do. So I'm sure everyone pored over the 40-page IGA that I'm talking about.
Honestly, not all of it, but it was pretty interesting that we're able to kind of provide this service.
Yeah, so the difference is what this IGA allows us to do, we contract with the Oregon Youth Authority and Department of Human Services if a youth is in the custody of those two agencies in our Turning Point program, and we get a rate for that. Josephine County kids that are not connected to one of those agencies, that's a main priority of ours, say a kid that's on probation in Josephine County. Not DHS, we don't want to push them to that agency. Not OYA, we don't want to push them to that agency. But the service that we provide, this is a way to recuperate about half of the daily rate that we get. So we're able to serve, so far, every youth in Josephine County that's needed our residential program, we've been able to put them in that program. This is a way to bill the Oregon Health Authority for right about $100 a day for the kids, local kids that we have
for
in
each
program.
One.
Yep, every one. Okay. It's $96.15 a day. We opened in February, so we are actually able to, once this is signed and sealed and delivered, we're able to back bill for all of the kids that we've had in to date.
Oh, okay.
So we haven't lost anything, and we knew that was the case, but this is the one piece of lagging, the one lagging contract that we have for the program.
What kind of service are you looking to provide through this, or that you do provide?
We provide what's called BRS Level 4 treatment, which is Behavioral Rehabilitative Services. Mm-hmm. It's a Medicaid-approved program, which is where the dollars ultimately come from. And what that says is we will give a certain number of hours and minutes of individual counseling, individual skill building, and group counseling to every youth in the program. Aside from everything else we
do.
No, this is
residential.
So aside from everything else we do, the school program,
yeah.
the any vocational things that we do, community things.
We're not doing that in the detention side?
Not to the level of this.
Okay.
Yes, we are doing it,
yeah.
And we base the model off what we do in the BRS.
Okay.
But this is basically a state and federal mandate that you will, if you take our money, you'll give this amount of service to each kid.
Wow.
And so that's how the whole residential program is built and funded.
Okay.
And so this just, like I said, this allows us, actually, it's a great benefit. It's half the rate, but it's at least something for a Josephine cool. County youth that comes into our program.
Great.
Been through legal, approved on each end there.
Sounds good.
Any questions?
This is a new form.
Yes.
But we used to get this.
This is, no, we didn't. This was actually a, we went after this
okay.
when we opened this time.
Yeah.
Through some research and some careful research, really, like what is out there. And we realized, yes, there is a pot of money that we can access for a low. It used to be just a general fund draw.
Mm-hmm.
If a Josephine County youth on probation needed our residential program and they were in there for 6 months, they needed it, great, we paid for it. But it was 100% general fund draw. This allows us to offset.
Forgive me that I didn't know that. I don't think I've ever been liaison to your program,
no.
So I don't know it as well as I know some others.
The contract does ask for one signature, so when we go forward, we just need to make sure that we authorize the chair or whoever to sign. So.
Right.
This is an administrative thing I think that we really need to talk about, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Saying that, you know, just your investment taxpayer in this element to, you know, provide for the detention side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't just do probably one or the other. You've got to do them both. And
right.
Then, gave us, afford us this opportunity, and we've been mm-hmm. aggressive. I think one of the things that we often said when we weren't going to not pursue other funding streams to shore up the Delta on providing these services, and this is just one more example. Mm-hmm. The audit is one side of it, but everything that you've done to, mm-hmm. you know, hey, we can go after this now, is a really good story that we need to continue to tell.
It really is, and it's one of those that unless you have it, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't go after it. So we've all these past five and a half, six years, we've had all of this basically on the table, but without the program up and running,
right?
Kind of the horse,
yeah.
You know, without the cart or the cart without the horse. But
right.
Yeah.
Perfect. Sounds good.
Okay, so what do we need to do on this one?
Do I speak to this on Wednesday?
Do you mind?
Next? No.
That would be really great.
It'd be.
I don't.
A week from Wednesday.
Nope. All the way out to November 20th, right? So, unfortunately, that's how far out things are going on the week of WBS.
Okay, you're backdating it anyway.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
no,
retro.
Yes, it's retro.
So
we can,
anyway.
We can bill for, yeah, that's fine.
The WBS next that's not full is Tuesday, November 20th. It's the week of Thanksgiving, but it's the Tuesday.
Okay, I can be there.
Okay.
So. Great. So... I guess item number two.
Item number two, juvenile justice prevention restructuring.
I spoke about this briefly when I was here, whenever that was, a couple days ago. And this is part of a when we took on prevention as a department, we had I think a 1.75 FTE there. We're up to 6 point something at this point. A lot of changes have happened you know, after we took great changes. We talked about the school outreach officers and things like that. So this is a proposal to just restructure, and I know you have this in your packet, or mm-hmm. I'm assuming you do. Sean even put together a before and after sort of org chart related to prevention.
Not that didn't make it into our packet for some reason. I've seen it, but
oh,
it's not
didn't?
Here.
I have that here, just one copy of it.
That's okay, we can pass it around. It's
okay.
Just helpful.
Sure. So basically, we took on the, shortly after we took on prevention, we took on the tobacco accreditation and prevention coordinator that used to be under public health. She is now doing a lot of things in the schools and a lot of things a lot more closely related to our school outreach folks. So we'd like to reclassify, item number one is reclassifying her. And get her a little closer to where, to the work that she's actually doing, and eliminating that title because she's doing more than just the tobacco prevention piece, and so that will still be one of her primary duties. But the idea is to basically eliminate that title, promote up to one of the school resource positions, and have her keep those duties, which is 75% funded from the state tobacco grant. So that's mostly funded through that. So that's part one. Part two is with our three new, we had one school outreach position in Grants Pass High School and the two middle schools already, to get that position consistent with the three that we just hired for Three Rivers. So those four positions, out of those four, we'd like to promote one to a lead position. There's a lot of miles between Ivy High School, North Valley High School, and the different things that are good, that are going on. And so it would really make sense, and Sean does not have the time to do it, to have one sort of lead and coordinator of the work that will work with each school have individual needs, but the superintendent and assistant superintendent. So at the district level, things that are happening that need to happen in all schools, we feel that one lead going maybe into Dave Valenzuela's office rather than all four of these folks and dealing with the other school district also would make a lot of sense. So it's being able to, not adding FTE, but just promoting one of the four up to a lead.
They'd be a working outreach coordinator who's coordinating the others.
All of the same duties,
But
with the coordination piece and mainly the communication piece, really with two school districts and our prevention coordinator. So, and then I believe the last piece, we looked at some other positions in the county of similar, with similar...
size and scope.
Yeah, size and scope. Thank you, HR. And so we're asking to reclassify Sean's position. And we picked one that we picked from Community Corrections. Denise Olson, who has a similar size program, is the reason we looked at that. What number is it?
Internal comparators are a key factor, but also external. Mm-hmm. And did we evaluate, or is our system unique? So unique that it's hard to compare. I would imagine it's unique.
We're one of the only community corrections departments in the state that has internal treatment the way we do. So that program in and of itself is unique, and the partnership between the POs and the treatment. And then you add
the school element.
Well, we have a unique system through LADPC where the state funding for treatment comes to LADPC and distributes to five treatment agencies, now six: Options, Grants Pass Treatment Center, Community Corrections, OnTrack, ADAPT, and Choices. And the way they work as a team, they still have a component of not indigent. Yeah, no kidding. But it is a unique system in our community where you hear other communities talk about, you don't see so many working together the way that they do. But
I think that's an advantage of our size. We're right at the right spot of being large enough to have these that amount of funding, but small enough to be able to coordinate in a way that, probably if Douglas County couldn't do
right.
it, just the geographic element of being three times our size would be prohibitive. Mm-hmm. So.
Right, and actually all of these changes, although it would be significant with running the program, it's very little budget impact, and the additional really is, I will say this for Sean, she's done an incredible job managing carryover, really, since way back in the days of the commission under Janet Bell, when they worked together, and has done an outstanding job there. So it's sustainable.
Well, looking at these things, we try not to look at the people who are actually in them, but the size of Sean's heart for this program.
Right.
And Janet's before with the Commission for Children and Families. I mean, it's just, there's a long legacy of being pretty, they're going to do it whether they're, regardless. But it is appropriate. I think one thing also is that I don't see a lot of general fund allocated in here.
No.
No.
So
we've been intentional to find funding.
Really zero.
Funding. Yeah.
Zero.
So these are grant-funded programs. It's not as though we're doing, this is what the money's for. Kind of
program. This is where our marijuana tax dollars are being used. This is where prevention tax dollars are being used and other sites. So really, it's incredible to be.
I guess it is tax dollars. They're just cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. You're good?
100%.
You're good?
Mm-hmm. Finance is also...
Excellent.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Gone through all the...
Yeah.
I really appreciate this update and getting the scope, because your program's moved so much. It's been
hard for me to keep up.
Right.
In the last year, it's
Commissioner Morgan's familiar with the Commission for Children and Families and where we've gone.
Right.
But I don't believe Commissioner DeYoung is.
It was long gone by the
with
time.
All those transitional things, back in the day. It's changed dramatically.
right.
in 8 years.
Really has.
Whole gamut.
So would, if I'm speaking on the, would you like
me
to speak on this also?
This is just an
internal blessing.
Yeah.
If we give the blessing, there's nothing
that.
To go over there. It would be a PAF for us to sign.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
So
we push through the PR or the.
Yeah, it's not an additional position. Liaisons can sign off on it.
Perfect. Well, good. Thanks for the update.
So no action at the weekly business session on this?
Okay.
If you're in approval?
20th, yes, absolutely.
All right.
I made approval.
Cool.
Great.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to item 1B1 is public work. Rob Brandis will be coming up. And number one is the 2018 fund exchange agreement, number 33075-2018, chip seal project.
It was great timing. I was out of trade magazines here to flip through. Good morning. This is our annual exchange of the federal dollars through the state. This allows us to remove the federal requirements on that money that's allocated there initially. So effectively what happens is ODOT exchanges it for 94 cents on the dollar. They then use those funds on larger projects of theirs. It gets rid of those strings for us. In our case, we've typically used chip seal or pavement. There's a wide range of things we can do. But honestly, a lot of it comes down to it's easier to report for us, too. We could do for paint striping, but then Lori would be printing out reports this thick to send to them. So we try to get it on as few areas as possible,
yeah,
just
like
to streamline
chunk
that.
Style
yeah.
Projects.
I wanted to give the board just kind of here's a summary history of what this has looked like and it kind of vis-a-vis the MPO. So the actual allocations we get down the left side there, and then I've grayed in the most recent 5 years, which shows the MPO. Once the MPO came into place, we lost about $110,000. I say lost. It got moved into the MPO, so it has to be spent within there. In this case, no one's keeping score, but we did the Merlin Sidewalk project, which kind of accounted for 5 or 6 years of that money that was allocated to the county into the MPO. But historically, we've used our percentage of that money to go towards chip seal, and occasionally we'll do it if we have an overlay. That's even easier. We can basically give them a bill from the paver and say, here's our reimbursement for the year. It's been a fantastic program. As you can see, the number does continue to trickle up, especially when you consider that, yeah, if that MPO money was back in there, we'd be over $600,000 a year.
You had a map that you had developed. I feel like I saw it, of the chip seal thing. Is overlay included in that too?
We don't do a lot of overlays. It's probably a mile a year, and the map would be fairly boring. You see, yeah, one chunk of azalea or one chunk
Why
of
Why it would be
park.
Relevant is for the Mr. Ford's passion of what can we do tangentially while we're there at parks if it costs a little bit to do that. Mm-hmm. I know you're working with Sarah on an evaluation process. You make a very, you know, a bang for the buck argument about once it gets to alligator point and you have to grind and reseal, why didn't you do it 5 years ago when it was a lot cheaper just to do a different way to do it?
Right.
So I think I've heard you on that. I think Sarah's heard you on that. And so making sure we don't have to do a full grind and relay or whatever it is that Chinook is a bad example because of the tree roots and stuff.
Right.
But there are other parks where it's like, gosh, we could have done that a couple of years ago and saved a lot of money.
Yeah, for sure. So this is the proposed, or at least the initial part of the 18-19 chip seal list. And you'll see that we're focusing heavily on District 2. And 30 is just the initial. That's been our baseline. But now that we've got additional funding with the last year's state transportation bill, we'll be adding roads to this. This is just to give you a sense, though, of what we'll be using for the exchange. But yeah, now that we've got a focus in District 2, we could certainly talk with Sarah to say, are there some parks in that area that you want to look at doing chip seal at the same time that we're out there, and we could look at working something out with her. The numbers showing this.
My opinion is that every time. I don't ever want the parks to be excluded from getting that if we're able to.
If they've got a need and a timing, yeah. A lot of that historically has been funding for them, but if they've got a triage list that they now want to start picking off to say, hey.
If she's worked with, Rubric or somebody.
Yeah, Dave and I have talked with her quite a bit about saying, trying to make some assessments. We could chip seal this, but it's not worth it because that thing's gone. It needs an overlay kind of decisions. But, we can certainly continue talking with her on this.
And before you do an overlay, good to grind those roots out so it's not like next year.
And if we have overlay in the work area in the work, work in the area, we could certainly talk to her, and she may want to go talk to whoever ends up getting the low bid to see if they'll honor that bid and extend the contract for her. That's certainly a viable
option.
That's
kind of what we're looking to do, because sometimes you're dealing with gas tax dollars, and it's not necessarily in our portfolio, those roads. So,
right.
You know, we have 562 miles or whatever it is of roads. Yeah, there's five more miles of roads that are parks. They're not included in the gas tax assessment. So,
but she may get a better number if it's Copeland, Mosier, whoever out there, or the way that they've already mowed.
Totally.
Yeah, we could certainly.
Now, I have a question, because I brought it up before, and I don't think I ever got an answer. If I'm looking, I take 29.42 miles and divide it into 416,000, I can come up with a certain amount of miles per, or cost per mile?
And that's just, yes, materials cost right there. That's oil and rock.
Okay.
Yep.
So I was interested in, say, for instance, having a project and going to Mosier or to Copeland, mm-hmm. or somebody that can do this, mm-hmm. find out if it's cheaper to private sector this part of it or to do it ourselves.
If we want to go down that road, my recommendation would be we do a pilot project and basically pick a road and we do a mile of each side by side.
I would love to either put it to bed, because I get asked all the time, you know, gee, why do we have a grade on? Why do we have a roller? Why do we have it when there's so many? It used to be it was just one paving company in the valley, and now there's 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could give a project on 199 to Oregon Mainline and be done tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
In comparison to weeks and months it takes to get something done. But I'm just curious.
That's a public works program, big conversation, because the guys do chip seal in the summer. Because they're doing ditching and maintenance work in the winter, and mm-hmm. you know, you got to have the whole system work out. So
right.
If you outsourced one, what are you guys doing?
It's partly right. Some staff.
So some of that has to be. You got
to. Well, I'm just curious to compare
right.
it to the private sector.
Right. True.
It's, you know, it.
No, it's a good.
We're one
question.
Of the things that's a big, and it comes up all the time. It's the PERS number that
sure.
comes up, and every county employee you have. It's adding to that at some point in time. And you know, let Bobby Copeland figure out what their retirement program is rather than the taxpayer.
All I'm saying is that you could save $100,000 over here,
mm-hmm.
say, for instance, but the fact that you're going to have guys laid off or you have to reduce your program or there isn't anybody full-time enough to do your maintenance, which nobody's going to.
And you may find, that Mosier says, I don't want to get in the chip seal business, or Copeland, I don't want to get in there's
or
no
you're
money
not going to want to do the maintenance element.
Yeah,
you know,
or I'm not going to want to do the maintenance element.
Some of it.
I think it needs to be looked at.
Oh, I don't disagree.
I would recommend if we want to do that, let's do a pilot project and say that we go out to bid for a mile of private and a mile of public and put them side by side on the same road and try that for a year or two to see how they hold up and what the result is and how it looks. And cost is a factor, obviously, too. But, yeah, if it's 10% less but it lasts 20% less, that changes the argument, too. But, yeah, we could certainly look at doing that for next summer.
Okay.
Or how the whole system works. That's
right, and
we'll take that into consideration. But at least when the public says, "Well, why don't I have the private sector?" and just say, "You know, we ran that study,
right?
And it didn't pan out. It was not in the citizens' best interest to do that on this particular thing. You know, full blown paving project. You don't want to get into paving I-5.
We got rid of our paver years ago.
You don't want to do that,
right?
And you try to pick what works the best for you within your realm of doing things. But if you don't ever look outside the box, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Times change.
Yeah, for sure. I would also add that we have done numerous chip seal jobs for ODOT in the past. They've come to us believing that they like the number that we gave them, and we obviously put a moderate handling charge in there, and they were still happy with the number they got for us working.
Well, compared to ODOT, I don't doubt that a bit.
Well, but to your point, they didn't contact one of the other local suppliers.
Yeah, ODOT
for chip seal.
Doing everything. They contract with Knife River, Mainline all the time. So,
yeah, chip seal is a very specific window where we admittedly cannot pave like others can. That's why we got rid of it. There's
right.
too many fixed costs. But chip seal is a fairly limited couple of pieces of equipment that we can do.
Right.
Balances our workforce year to year.
Plus, you can do it when you want it done.
And it's a niche, right? And nobody's coming to the local supplier saying, hey, we'd really love if you chip seal our driveway. That's typically not a conversation that happens. So, but we can look at doing a pilot project for this
okay.
coming summer.
This commissioner would be interested.
Okay.
Your liaison would be interested.
Okay. So, that's the usual. If you don't need me there next Wednesday, I would love to not be there. Here are we moving everything off?
What's on the agenda for next
Is that the night one?
That's the two ordinance, marijuana ordinance readings.
Is that all that's on it?
And Greg Day is before it, but those can take the general promotion.
Or we can certainly bump it to the late one. I mean, this is not time sensitive at all. We will not be
okay.
Chip suing for a while, as you were. So.
Well, I don't think you need to come for this one. I know your liaison could probably.
You know the shtick. You've only had it 3 years. You've suffered for eight.
Okay. No, if it's not time sensitive, let's do it now.
Okay.
Okay. Just bring it
to sounds good.
Those are the only things on the agenda. I won't.
You don't need to go.
Consented.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Take 2 seconds.
We'll leave the next week open for just one subject.
Come on.
Well, and for me, see, this is why I was asking. The only reason why I'm saying anything about the 20th is the resolutions for the animal advisory, the renewal of two people that are serving well, and it's like, and I was told they're going to put off till the 20th, and I'm like, why?
It takes 2 seconds.
I know, but I didn't get an answer back. I was told by staff it was going to be on the 20th.
Well, the chair is saying he doesn't want anything but those subjects, even if they're short like this, that nobody has commented, one person in 8 years for me on this subject. It's not a long drawn out deal, so. But it's up to you guys. So whatever you want to do. This one isn't time sensitive either. So whatever.
If you want to,
doesn't matter.
You want to do it on the 20th? I mean, on the 7th.
Well, that's why I was asking what all's on the agenda. Under consent calendar, it doesn't take much time
this
if
is
it's
a routine thing.
There's no money changing hands. Actually, there's just
in current policy. We already do it.
You want to just move it to consent?
Yeah.
Let's just move it to consent, because we're just going to read that anyway. That'll be, depending on what impact we have on the first subject, it could be 6 o'clock in the afternoon, but we'll get to it.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Moving on to item C, community corrections. Nate Gallivan is here. Item number C1 is Memorandum of Understanding between Josephine County Community Corrections and the United States Marshal Office Service for participation on the Violent Offender Task Force.
Good morning, Commissioners. Thank you for having me today. Josephine County Community Corrections, in conjunction with the United States Marshal Service, has agreed to participate in periodic joint enforcement operations within the intent to locate and arrest persons who have active state and or federal warrants with the approval of the attached Violent Offender Task Force, MOU. Josephine County Community Corrections can be reimbursed for overtime costs associated with planned operations. So routinely we will go through these operations with the U.S. Marshals, but the U.S. Marshals in correspondence with them have offered up some payment of overtime for us, and typically we don't allow for overtime with our practitioners unless it's emergency type situations. And so this is a resource that we are happy to move forward with your approval.
What does this mean? I mean, in dollars and cents.
For us, it's actually a gain just because we have the availability to tap into their resource. Okay. Their fiscal year ends in November 1st, and so we are able to use those funds all the way up through, and so this will be for the next coming.
Next one.
Yeah.
Questions?
We didn't use any overtime this last time.
No.
Okay.
We've been doing these for a while.
Yeah.
It's been a good partnership. The public is positive as far as the involvement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, last thing. Typically, the targeted population is sex offenders. It's non-compliant folks that are within our jurisdiction, just to make that clear. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, we've had
two.
Do
I need to go to the...
What's that?
Do I need to go to the next meeting for this, or... Will I need to be on the...
Agenda for consent?
Yeah, that sounds fine.
Yeah,
it would.
Right?
Can it be consent?
You said we've been doing it for a while.
We've been doing the program. We haven't been doing the reimbursement.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So we've just been paying out of our department for the overtime.
It's an administrative thing.
Yep.
I think you're a liaison, just a pair. But I don't want you is waiting around for, like you said, till 6 hours. But it'd be a two-minute, 1 minute.
Yeah, you just go me out and I'll just do it, and then you don't have to show up.
Yep.
Okay.
Is that fair enough?
Yep. Sounds good. Thank you. I'll send
you. The title read pretty much what it was all about, so I don't think
Great. Thank you.
Okay, item 2, financial report and business update. We've already handled 2A, so we're going to 2B, legal support staff for marijuana enforcement grant.
Thank you, Commissioners. Arthur O'Hare, Finance Director. Normally we would have human resources do a position, but this particular situation has a foot in each camp. It's the grant, plus it's the position that's involved in the grant. I wasn't comfortable just telling the DA or HR to move forward with the position until I had a chance to discuss with the board. Now, the grant itself was submitted through the sheriff's office. It's a marijuana enforcement grant. It included 3 deputies, an analyst, and a DA, but the grant application itself, which is part of your packet, says that the county will support the grant by providing some of the upfront costs and the support staff. This is the support staff that the DA is now requesting.
I'm just curious. We have an elected official who applied for a grant.
Yes.
And committed county resources. They have no authority to commit. Unless they're saying we already have those positions that are in existence, not creating new positions.
Did we have a conversation about this?
I believe the sheriff talked to the board about the grant and got the board's approval the green light to move forward with
but
the
I
grant.
But I could go both ways of not remembering that.
This is the first time I've heard that the county was committed to matching the grant.
Okay.
Well, that's not something I had heard in any process at AOC. It wasn't something
it
I heard.
Happened, the discussion, if it did happen, because I could have been dreaming it, but it happened here. He was sitting there. Yeah. We talked about the outline of the overall 300,000. Did that happen, right?
We had we were applying for a $600,000
grant. No, it's okay, but maybe I wasn't here.
It didn't break it down.
Could have been.
It didn't.
I don't think it broke it down into we're going to have to bring in a DA support staff.
Well, the grant itself does not allow for paying for support staff. That's for whatever reason, that's a provision within the grant. It will not pay for support staff. But part of the grant was that, of course, the county provides some support.
How much are we talking, and what was the grant for?
Well, the grant is a marijuana enforcement grant. So what it's paying for is 3 deputy sheriffs.
How much, though?
It's a $600,400.
And this position is looking to cost us?
$35,000. That is the salary for this support staff
this means
position.
But it also said something about we would be contributing this many
kind
deputies.
That's what the grant is paying for, the deputies.
Okay.
He's right now talking about
3 detectives, an analyst, and 1 deputy DA, plus materials and supplies. Part of the grant application states the county will financially support this program by adding 1 DA support staff. And that's what he's here for.
What I'm trying to get at is that we got a grant for $600,000, and they're asking us for $35,000.
I'm okay with.
That's a pretty good return.
Yeah.
I agree with you with the policy.
I misread.
If you weren't here for that, that could have been. I can't remember.
I don't remember either.
Within the sheriff's budget,
I may have misread what they were saying as our match.
And it says here, the district attorney's office is co-recipient with the sheriff's office of a marijuana enforcement grant.
Right.
10%, 60,000.
Co-recipient.
Yeah.
So that's going to pay for that pays for the DA's, 1 deputy DA plus materials and supplies, but it does not cover that support person that the grant says we have to have.
I understand.
That's our buy-in is $35,000 for the support person.
About 5%?
At about 5%.
Here's the line that got me. But we'll also be willing to match this grant with 6 new positions the sheriff and DA's office.
That's existing.
That's what I was asking. Yeah. Are they existing, or are we committing
that would change things.
That's the line that got my attention.
I'm okay with 35. I'm not okay with saying 6.
No,
that's the line that I read earlier in the meeting that.
Well, then we would have all missed that.
Okay.
So that would have been a big. But if we're leveraging it against existing,
correct.
You know,
yeah.
because this line specifically says Josephine County is financially supportive of this task force and is willing to match the grant with 6 new positions for the sheriff and DA's office. That's not existing.
My understanding, that's the existing staff that we're adding. Well, we are, and we have added.
Okay, and that counts. I'm just checking, because I don't remember us being told that we would hire 6 new positions to match a grant.
3 detectives, an analyst, and 1 deputy DA is 5.
No,
and
that's
then
the grant.
No, I'm looking at the memo from the DA.
Okay.
That's at the page 53.
Well, it's in the grant itself, too, if you look at the application. It did. It was
the sheriff applied.
Yes.
The memo's from the DA.
Correct.
But, I mean, it's kind of one of those things that I knew that we were getting how many positions. This wording of grant with 6 new positions is a match.
See that.
That's interesting.
Good
catch.
It's a good question. My understanding of that specific issue is that these are the existing budget, existing positions within the existing budgets. I can go back and specifically pin that down again and say, now this is the board
from the DA
is looking.
Is not obligatory. Yeah. It's the granting agency that says. Mm-hmm. You know, if the Criminal Justice Commission sends us a letter and says, here's your money for the matching for the 6 positions that you said you'd hire new, then that's different than a letter iterating from the DA. She's probably going to find where the...
Well, he's referring to page 6 in the grant as, it says right here, new positions. Right. Not only is Josephine County financial support of the task force, but is also willing to match this grant with 6 new positions for the sheriff and DA's office. That is the application the sheriff submitted, saying that we would hire new positions.
And it might be those 3 resident deputies. That's 3 of them, and then I don't know. It could be three others pretty easily.
Right.
That he said there's six people in this.
I just want to make sure that we're not being obligated to hire 6 additional people we don't have the funding for yet.
Yeah,
or is it
just writing a check for $35,000? Writing a check 6 times.
I think we need to clarify that from the sheriff. Have the sheriff come in and say, hey, you wrote this in the grant. Are these people that are already here or not?
Well, to me, the definition of new is they don't work here yet.
Well, they could be
6
new
from positions.
16, 17.
You're making a position new. You're not adding 6 new people to fill those positions. I don't know that.
The FTE has changed from the previous budget year. And we have had a change of 6 since the previous budget year. And that probably all he was looking to do is just say, well, those 6. And they are. I mean, if they're the resident deputies,
correct.
This is part of their program.
Mm-hmm. It was part of the marijuana funding that we are using to.
Yeah. It's just,
to
I think.
Well, and Gally Rand was.
Commissioner Morgan makes a good point. Let's make sure. Let's make sure
person.
We're.
The prevention
doing
person
what
was
we
a marijuana funded
do.
Person.
Right.
And, yeah, the code enforcement person was a marijuana funded. So that plus the resident deputies, there's your 6, and they've all.
I just want to make sure that
if that counts.
That we're touching all the bases before we say we hit a home run.
Sure. So,
totally.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Just clarification. I think.
Good point.
We need
and we'll.
One of the concerns
I'll get
I
that
have
back
to raise is that, and some of it is my doing, but you know, I think that we have to, we need to get a really good handle on the general fund obligations that we're doing. We've done some, and I don't know how they. I'm pretty good with numbers in our budget. I would just tell you that. I've got it in my head, but I sure like to see stuff on page, paper to reinforce. Yeah, you're right. You've got it. You can balance your checkbook in your head, but I want to make sure that we're not over-obligating ourselves in some of the general fund appropriations that we're doing. This is going to be a general fund ask of $35,000, and I know that we've got some money in there that's kind of, you know, we've been very frugal in this last 6 years to get where we are. I don't want to put us on a negative trajectory of adding to our ending fund balance reserve that we're starting to get down there at that hairline threshold, and that's it's important for us to all have that concept. If you can't do the math in your head and run your checkbook that way, then we need to be seeing it.
You can't?
I can, because I know the numbers. I've lived them for 8 years.
SRS funding, if you look at the schedule that the board that I gave to the board back in September when we looked at the kind of the umbrella SRS funding, you'll see that SRS funding as a column has 500,000 remaining at the end of the 5-year term, and the marijuana funds have the 17% and the 3% have 800,000 remaining, almost 900,000 at the end of the 5-year term.
So I think there's a buffer.
We've
committed most of that money over the next 5 years, and that when that spreadsheet that I said this year, next year, most of that is committed.
That if you look at the spreadsheet that I did give you, and that was part of the discussion on back on September 4th with the board, there's funds remaining in those columns.
Let's just go over that again.
That'd be fine.
Putting this one in there, making sure that the six and the big I think the largest variance in there is the PILT funding and how we're treating that in next budget year.
Right.
It should be at that 800,000 or, you know, right around there, Mark, because I think that 1.8 was an anomaly with the
That's how much we put in this year's budget was 8. We didn't put in the full 1.8 because we just don't know.
Go back to
leave it.
Yeah.
Because the one is not, it came in, but it
We have to also remember that part of this is that before we dedicate that money out, remember that our sheriff's infrastructure for radio, the city and 911 just obligated a lot of money to replace theirs, and our sheriff is hanging out to dry with 30-year-old equipment that is obsolete. The towers and everything of the 911 dispatch moving and all that we're looking at $1 to $1.5 million of infrastructure upgrades that we're going to have to do for the sheriff's office dispatch and radios.
Where are you going to get that money?
SRS, if it doesn't come out, but we've talked about...
That's it's obligated.
But if the new renewed, SRS is obligated, but that's what I'm saying. Don't use up that 800,000 of the leftover marijuana when we're looking at having some infrastructure, big costs that are coming up. That are one-time expenses.
Well, SRS expired, and so we are likely back on shared receipts.
Mm-hmm.
Timber prices were good this last year, but I don't know where they are.
You won't know until you get the check.
You won't.
Pretty much, yeah. That's the way I try to use it.
You can speculate. Timber prices are up.
That's what I'm just saying is there may be a line item at the end of the column, but we have some big expenses we don't have a way of paying for yet.
That's what I want us to be conscious of.
Yeah.
Every little 35, if you keep... What we've done this year with obligating some general fund money that was kind of outside, you take that down 5 years, and there's nothing there. You know, theoretically, there may not be. You keep doing that for 5 years, and there's nothing left.
But if we get clarification on the matching the grant with 6 new positions, we get clarification on that. I think we're asking here today is for that half position that. For $35,000 is roughly what you're saying,
right? That's a salary.
Yep. I mean, I'm okay with that.
I mean, that's going back to
it's
legal support staff,
right?
So I think we're okay on that.
Okay. So my understanding then is that I'll get the sheriff. You want just to hear back from me, or do you want to hear back from the sheriff?
You're fine.
Okay, so
clarification on this. Just say, what did you ask for? What did you say?
What are we being obligated to?
Right. What are you obligated to?
And then should it come back the way, best case scenario, yes, it's all part of the current budget. It's nothing new as far as the 6 positions and the sheriff's obligation, so on and so forth. Then maybe the easiest way then to move forward, I'll inform you of that, and then we'll just have the position action form, which is normally what happens,
sure.
is you get a position action form for your signatures.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks.
Great.
That's all that I have. So.
Yeah. Well, and I would say if the answer is not best case scenario, then I'm not signing.
Then we're chatting. We're chatting again.
Then we have a problem. Houston, we have a problem. Item 3A, Board Business, is 3A is the resolution number 2018-059 in the matter of reappointment to the Animal Shelter Advisory Committee.
We have two members, Paul Bodeving and Nancy Lindquist, that have served their first term. They're eligible for one more 4-year term. Both are active members. They're both Illinois Valley residents. It's nice to have participation throughout the county. Both are active in the animal world and actively a part of all the animal evacuations and help we had. So they're valued members, I recommend reappointment.
And they're both renewals?
Renewals.
Correct. Okay.
Great.
And item B, matter from commissioners?
I think Mr. Johnson and facilities, they do a lot of stuff that we just don't necessarily, you know, see all the time. We just went on a little quick tour. There's so many potential moving parts in this facility redesign, and either he or I, nobody has the absolute grip on this. I think we need to. It's a big decision for stuff. So, yeah, it's just really important. I'm just impressed at the... There's aesthetic things, washing the windows, repainting the ambassador, fixing the structural stuff over there, and just trying to tie stuff up. And sometimes I know that there's pressure that's put, and it's on him, and he's fine with that. But the, you know, like the ADA ramp that we're trying to do with the ambassador, he got one bid, and the guy won't call him back.
Those are market things that we can't, we don't have anything to do with that.
It's just understanding that,
right,
that sometimes.
And we just, it's frustrating for him because we want to get it done. Get that done. And if it's, the market says there's nobody to do it, then we just can't keep pressing to get it done.
Well,
you know, we try.
Can. We have to keep, you know, squeaky wheel pressure.
I think the ADA thing, you have to just be very careful. You've got it documented that you have tried to get that done. And it can't.
We're not out of compliance.
Correct.
It's just not as efficient as it
right.
should be. So it's just one of those that you need to, and we're working on trying to, you know, we've got a lot of moving parts, programs that are growing. It's challenging with aging infrastructure and not a bottomless pit of money to just go buy buildings and, you know, drop millions of dollars in them to go fix them up. We don't have a printing press downstairs. If that were the case, it would be easy. I like the heart, though. It makes it great. You know, you just. I was looking at things to this week of, like, looking at moving IT so that CAC and CASA can have their appropriate footprint, and looking at the H Street building. Well, that's actually where they came from 10 years ago, and that's not big enough for them. Veterans is looking to go there, and
I have a question on that, on the CASA building and moving IT.
Mm-hmm.
Is that's all cost, you know? And I, not knowing, looking at the CASA side of it and their requirement, IT really kind of likes where they are versus moving them for another program. And I'm just curious as to the thought process behind that.
Likes to be somewhere is not a consideration to me at all.
I get it.
That they have to be there.
And honestly, I don't know that it's the best use of space for them anyhow, but yes, they're cozy. It's better than what D Street was or a block away was. But
for my consideration, it's efficiency, cost. Those are the first two. And what are the alternatives? I'm looking at when I put facilities somewhere, that they're depreciating their location upon a client that they're able to service right there. So one of your commutes is zero. It's upstairs or something like that. It's next to zero. Coming from somewhere every day to start with is not efficient. And so IT goes somewhere for everybody. They are in somewhat of a hub with juvenile and the Demick campus and the courts and stuff. I don't see this facility as being any less than a hub to the jail, which has a tremendous amount of IT facilities and the Demick campus.
Well, they can be just about anywhere. They're going to be a hub.
They should be somewhere.
They're going to be a hub for corrections, juvenile here, more here than the jail. Like, say, I'm moving out to the jail because that can be the hub. Because it can, you know, no. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
We did meet yesterday about the courthouse hours, and
who's we?
It was myself. Who else was there?
We delegated him to meet with the for the hazard snow.
We talked about snow days. Snow days, and you know, courts was in. Courts was heavily represented in the room because they're probably one of the major ones. Public Works was there. JJ was there, myself.
Finance was such a willing participant as well.
And basically HR. Kicked around what, you know, how do you streamline it? Who gets notified? What are the hours? Arthur brought up a fantastic idea, and I think it was well received from everybody, that the courthouse is open. the courthouse is open at 8 a.m., and then you leave courts to figure out whether they want to be in on a snow day or not a snow day. That just, if the courthouse is open every day that it is scheduled to be open, then we're not saying, okay, we're going to have a two-hour delayed start. If your department starts at 9, does that mean it's an 11-hour, 11 o'clock delayed start? If you just said the courthouse is closed today or open today, then department by department, you want to come up and you were the guy that had the idea or experience in this line.
Wow. Thank you. So my experience is back when I worked for Western Oregon University, and we struggled with the same issue or debated the same issue, and through all the variations of the debate, we came to the conclusion that the university is open every day, every time it's supposed to be open. You as an individual, a student or a professor, teacher, needs to be responsible to judge whether you can safely make it to the university or not. We're in the same boat. We have people who live in the Illinois Valley, people who live up, you know, 238 in the Williams and Murphy, and people who live up north. It and weather can be very regionalized, very local, and it may not be safe for you to come in, but it's safe for everybody else to come in. So to have a two-hour delay based on something that's occurring in the environs, it doesn't make sense. And it causes all kinds of issues with, from my point of view, the payroll issue. You know, you delayed 2 hours, so is that, do I have to take that out of my vacation? Well, I wasn't scheduled to be here today, and my fellow employee got a free 2 hours, so I should be paid for 2 hours also. I should get more than what... So it becomes a big debate. I think the issue is it keeps it simple, keeps it straightforward, and puts the responsibility back where it belongs with the individual to say, if you can safely make it to work, then come to work. If you cannot safely make it to work, then don't come to work. And there's no harm, no foul, no penalty, no, you know, writing up because it's a bad weather day.
My thought was is that we delegated this group to go get us a solution.
Correct.
That's only part of it. And I don't know that I want to necessarily discuss it here. I've dealt with it more than probably any commissioner since the last 20 years with a couple of snowstorms and flood storms that we've had. It's challenging.
Yes.
Some programs never close. So what happens when we're always open, but we give the discretion to the employee to say, it's not safe for me to come in?
That's
right. That was part of the discussion. It wasn't the whole discussion. We also debated
policy of if you choose to not come in, you're taking a PTO.
Correct.
That up front.
Yep.
And public having it all written out.
When the snow day is, Public Works is working. Ryan Johnson was there, and he says, I can be here to open this courthouse at 8 a.m. if that's when it's supposed to be open.
Sometimes not just about what Ryan Johnson can do.
He's one of them.
And I'm sorry, I disagree. Public Works is an essential function of citizen travel. Sheriff's Office is 24-7, 365.
Right. Not comparable.
Analyst, a grant analyst in finance is not.
Right.
And this is part of a coup.
When I closed the county, when you guys first... I did it. I don't regret it. It was the right thing to do. What we didn't have is I should be required to make this decision by midnight or something.
Yeah.
Sometimes I was making it at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And some people are halfway here already.
Right.
And it's like, wait a second. I just trudged through 2 feet of snow at my driveway, and now I'm being told that the county's closed. Those are the things that need to be ironed out, because you will be faced with making the decision about closing
stuff. And that's why we had the discussion that the building is open. Whether you can get there or not, I get that. If somebody comes in here in 2.5 feet of snow and finds out that finance is not open, as a personal person comes in and finance is not open, they should be able to trudge through 2 foot of snow and say, I'll bet they're not open. But when we have courts to take into consideration and a lot of things at 4 o'clock in the morning, and courts need to know, and we need that to leave
I've
that up to court.
This, so don't, I mean,
I've
probably done this a dozen times.
I know you have.
Had these conversations.
But here's the thing. The courts can't close if we're open.
Right.
They can't.
Right.
They require us to be a part of that decision. So for us to just say, well, we're going to be open.
Not what they said yesterday.
Yeah, because the courts told us that they can't.
Kirk Bruss said.
They can't be closed. Even
if we're open.
But even if.
They can't open if we're closed. If I say that this courthouse is closed, the doors don't get opened by right.
Well, right.
So but that's when they have to close.
But they can't be closed, 4 days in a row? The maximum.
2 hours.
Yeah, because they have to be able to process and do arraignments and restraining orders, whatever else.
It's not so.
So we discussed a broad angle of
things. And our clerk can't be closed if they're open.
That's not. With court security, that's a gray area, apparently. It sounds like we should shoot for that, but that's.
So what we came down to also was we have a draft policy where we discussed we're going to bring it to the manager's meeting, which is next Monday. We're going to distribute that policy and we're going to debate, because there are department specific issues, like you pointed out.
Absolutely.
Public Works, Sheriff, because they don't.
It may not happen while you guys are in office, but there will come a time when a commissioner is looking at 24 inches of snow pretty much everywhere in Josephine County.
Yeah.
We're telling people in PSAs to stay home if you're not innocent, shouldn't be on the road.
Right.
And then I'm still opening. We
except if you're a county worker, yeah.
Right? We shouldn't be having this.
Everybody stay home.
That's
except if you work for the county. Yeah,
so,
I have to be here. So, yeah.
We'll continue to work on this.
Correct.
Get it all lined up. But certain things, I want to be at that manager's meeting because I've been there, and I've been faced with making this decision all by myself about, how long do I wait to make this, if it's going to get better or no. Just
That's
something to help the commissioner say, no, I'm required to make a decision by 5 o'clock in the morning. You can't wait till 7. Delays are always 11 o'clock. It doesn't matter when you start, but the county will be open at 11 o'clock, not a two-hour delay. You know what I mean? Delayed opening is at 11. Mm-hmm. Things like that that will be so helpful to be like, I don't have to make the decision. It's already been made.
That's what I'm saying. You don't have to make the decision if the decision has been made that the courthouse is open, and if you can't get
that's
to work
not,
on a personal
that's
practical,
not an answer, though.
That's not practical.
All right.
There's
going
to be times
good,
we have to
feels
close.
Good, but it isn't.
Well, I think there are those
what
snowmageddon
essential services
issues
are here that have to have the courthouse open.
Yeah,
at
that's
the
a
cost
good point
of somebody's life.
I like to think of our offices.
We are that essential.
Okay.
We are,
but we work regardless.
Well,
let's
I think
move
I,
on to something.
I think there's nuances there that we're not touching on right now.
So the outcome of the meeting was to say that no matter what, always the courthouse is open.
They're going to have another meeting with the manager.
With the manager.
Right, with the manager on the policy.
That was what came out of yesterday with the people in the room.
That's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
So
here's where you got. What does this sound like? We're refining it. It's good progress.
No, and it wasn't a absolute. I mean, there are those
nuances.
Like I said, snowmageddon issues where everybody's covered with 24 inches.
And this is
of
where
snow.
A coop comes into play. What's that position that has to go through the snow to get there? Because we have an obligation that you have to have that report in by this time, or there is going to be those positions in county government.
And we discussed the public works. You know, their role if it's snowing, they get out in their four-wheel drives and their plows.
Community Corrections has the same restriction as the courts.
Yeah.
That if somebody is arrested on such and such, the report has to be in by.
Yeah.
They have to have a hearing.
Yeah.
Well, the hearing, it just has to have the report to the courts. But anymore, I can do it electronically. But
yeah. Well, we'll have a further update after Monday.
There's a reason why it's challenging. And there isn't a silver bullet answer with this. That's just the reality of it. It's fine.
Yeah.
But putting some parameters around it is the goal that I would like to have, so there's guidance for future board people to say, I've been in no man's land, and it's challenging.
Yeah.
So,
I think we can get clarity.
Thank you, sir. Okay, anything else?
No,
if not, we are going to adjourn Commissioner Morgan?
No, it's okay. We're good.
I'm still working on the road ordinance. I'm on page 2, so I'm making progress, and it's actually kind of been good.
Okay.
I wouldn't say fun, but
So with that,
we're looking at an ordinance that would kind of govern public lands for fire, emergency fire access.
Yeah.
So there's a provision that looking at Gray Creek and expanding a wilderness designation that would, you know, encourage road decommissioning in a very fire-prone area. That's like, really, people? That is not so. So
it's not conducive to maintaining its wild and scenic.
That's great.
If it's wild and scenic and you can't get to it to put it out,
delegated to draft one.
Okay,
I think you were part of that. You know, it's kind of coming from the roads question and stuff. It's like you know, the utility ordinance we just did is whatever we can put on the books. Just like, well, you know, we kind of don't want that to happen. And
yeah.
It's the health, safety, and welfare of our citizens to get emergency fire access for putting it out. The feds just seem to keep trickling at trying to, you know, close off, reduce access, and it's like, no, no, that's not working out for us here. So just coming at it from a different angle for the smoke and all that.
Okay. Then we will adjourn the meeting at 10:45, and then we will open convening for the governing body of the 4-H Extension Service District.
So we're adjourned?
We are adjourned at 10:45.
I need to use the restroom.
Okay.